Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Hospice of Lubbock, Happy State Bank, and the law offices of Mullen, Horde, and Brown, LLP. Now, here's your host, Ted Dotts.
I'm Ted Dotts, and welcome to Faith Matters. Today, our guest is Dr. Ted Hartman. Now, Dr. Hartman is with us for the second time for a number of reasons. Number one, I read his second book, and I realized we hadn't begun to touch the rich depths he has to offer us. Number two, I discovered and learned that he really helped establish a health net, that is a telecommunications effort in which physicians can reach across many miles, at that time over little copper wires, to help with surgery or, in the first case, a neonatal case. But welcome today, Dr. Hartman. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
Would you start off? You have 1,000 miles of battle. You went into major battles, the Battle of the Bulge, for 1,000 miles. You saw a great deal of death and suffering. To your surprise, I think you survived that. But the second day of battle was particularly important and powerful. Would you mind talking about the battle at Noville and what happened with you there?
We had battled all day from a small Belgian town named Foy, which we were had taken from the Germans, and we were moving up toward this town of Noville. It was pretty fierce fighting all day long. We were fighting particularly with the infantry, who rode in sort of a truck affair so that they could move as fast as the tanks could move in our battles. We saw a number of those half-track trucks that the infantry were in get hit as we were moving toward Noville, and then one of our tanks got hit with a German 88, which was a very fierce weapon that could penetrate several inches of any kind of heavy metal. We kept moving, though, and we were at the edge of Noville around 4 o'clock that afternoon. It was winter, and in Europe, in northern Europe, it begins to get dark around 4 o'clock. So we were preparing for spending the night just looking into the town of Noville, but not trying to take it yet. And well, we had lined up outside, had not received our usual password, which we would get for each night, when the company commander received a call from the battalion commander telling us to come through the objective, that is Noville, to the high ground the other side of town. We were thinking, you know, they were defending this town all day long. Could we now simply drive right on through? However, an order is an order, and we were ordered again to come through at Noville. So the company commander started, and we followed. I was the fourth tank in our row at that time, we had about 12 tanks left in our company out of our beginning 18, the others having been destroyed by the Germans. We started through this town. There were buildings, burned buildings and destroyed buildings all about. There were a number of various types of war vehicles, all burnt and destroyed, and we got partway through this town, and I saw a light go over my head as I was driving, which had to be the back end of a special type of shell that would pierce through armored vehicles. It went over my head, and I was thinking, are we in enemy territory? Well, about 4 minutes later, on the radio came the message that the sixth tank in our group had been hit, blocked the road so that we could not get back out of Noville, and that we were in the middle of German territory. We decided, which we had been taught to do in a situation like that, that we would move on through to the high ground, the other side of town, which turned out to be an apple orchard. The tanks, those of us, five tanks that were left in front, made a circle with our back ends toward each other and our guns facing outward so we could protect each other. Just as we got there, one of the tanks got hit. Some of the people from that tank got in the other tanks that were still working, and then the company commander couldn't seem to know what to do. There was a lot of radio talk back and forth, and finally he told us that he wanted us, when he gave the signal, to all the rest of the other four tanks to start their engines and get back to our own lines the best way we could. Well, I was driving. The tank commander, who was in the turret of the tank and must always be standing up so that he can see around and be the eyes and ears for everybody in the tank, he just went blank. He just couldn't function. He couldn't tell us what to do. As the driver, I had to decide what to do. So when the message came to start, we started our engines. Two more of our tanks got hit. That just left two of us.
Now, Dr. Hartman, you're 19 years old at this time.
I'm 19 years
old. Go ahead, please.
So I started the engine, started out, and we were picking up speed when all of a sudden we dropped into some kind of a hole. It turned out to be the sunken foundation of a burned-out house. Try as I might, I could not get those tank tracks to pull that 33-ton vehicle up out of that hole. And so after several tries, I told the people in the tank we would have to get out and go back by foot. Now, the snow was a foot thick during that time in Belgium.
There were five of you in the tank.
There were five originally, but we had picked up two more from tanks that got hit. We got out, went laid down by a hedgerow nearby to kind of put our minds together and see what we were going to do. One of the other soldiers and I decided, since we had to go back by foot, we would simply follow the path of the road that we came in on, but at a distance from it. And we were just getting ready to go when we heard footsteps. Footsteps got louder, and we were sure that it was Germans coming after us. But as they came close, there was a voice saying, "Please don't shoot. I'm an American. Please don't shoot. I'm an American." It was one of our men, and he was in one of the tanks that got hit, got burned in the face and eyes, and could not see. We had him join our group, and then we decided that it's time for us to start back toward our own lines.
Dr. Hartman, I'm going to interrupt for a station break because right now we're at a cliff-hanging moment, and this will keep us all eager to return. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with Dr. Ted Hartman, former dean of the medical school of Texas Tech University.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotz. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotz.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotz, and our guest today is Dr. Ted Hartman. And we have just left him a moment ago when, after his tank was lost in the deep foundation of a house, and they're behind German lines, and they picked up an American soldier who's been blinded from when his tank was destroyed, and they're walking a path hoping to get back to the American lines. Would you pick up that story, Dr. Hartman? We're ready.
Yes, we decided that we were ready to go, and we started out. We got a fair piece. At this time, the snow was a foot deep, as I've mentioned, so it was really pretty tough going. I looked back, and that soldier, Eugene Bodewin, who we had picked up and who was burned in the eyes, was lagging way behind. And we decided something had to happen. Some of the group said we must keep going to our own line. But the other soldier and I, who had made the decision of how we were going to get there, said, "That is not a choice. We must go back and help Bodewin." So we did. And we got him. We half carried and half pulled him through as we forded a couple of creeks, and then one small river we crossed. We started up a long hill, and finally, it seemed like eternity, but it was a couple of hours, I'm believing. We reached a farmhouse. We heard voices, and we listened carefully, and they were speaking English. Now, the Germans had put some of their English-speaking soldiers in American uniforms in our lines, so we didn't know whether they were going to be the people that we dared contact or not. But we got closer, and some of us, two or three of us, went forward to be recognized. We were thinking different things about America, of Gene Sinatra and a whole bunch of different type of peoples whose names the Germans might not know. But as we got there to the soldiers to be recognized, they were from the 101st Airborne Division of American troops. And they told us that they had been informed that we would likely be coming through, and not to demand that we give a password, which we didn't know for that particular day. As soon as we passed them, we got onto the road to start back toward our line. Just then, the battalion commander of the infantry came up in his tank, and he said, "You mustn't be hiking on this road. It's been mined." I said, "Well, we have a soldier who's been burned in the eyes, and we need to get him back to the battalion aid station." He said, "Climb on the back of the tank, and I'll take you." And he did. At the battalion aid station, Bodeman received really superb care, was set up to be evacuated to England, where he had excellent care, and then back to America, and regained his full eyesight. I kept in touch with him a little bit after that for a while, but gradually our communications stopped.
Dr. Hartman, I tend to define faith as the risk we take to make life good. When I think of you and your friend turning back against other odds to get the man whose eyes were blinded, such an act of faith. It made his life good, and I think yours too, for having done it. Would it be possible for you also to tell another story, the story about your Jewish friend who was captured in that same battle?
It was the same battle a day earlier of the Jewish friend. His tank had been hit by German shells. His tank had been in a field that had a spring in the middle of the field, and the tank had dropped down into that spring, and it was a 33-ton vehicle, which would go through any kind of mud for a certain distance. The driver was unable to get the tank out of that spring. While they were there, the tank got hit, and this friend, Ivan Goldstein, and the assistant driver jumped out of their seats and jumped down and sunk down into the water of the spring. They thought, temporarily, this would be a good place to hide. Before they knew it, there were several German soldiers facing them with weapons and ordering them out. Now, the other three members of the crew had been injured pretty severely. The only two that were walking were my friend Ivan and the driver. They were ordered to take these injured soldiers, carry these injured soldiers about a quarter of a mile up a hill where they might get those injured soldiers taken care of. They also put Ivan Goldstein and the driver in a pigsty which already held a number of American prisoners. They were taken up from there during that first evening. They were taken up to the farmhouse itself where the German officers were, and one of the German officers was a major who had lived in Brooklyn. He spoke impeccable English and was asking them questions, and he noticed Ivan had in his pocket a letter. He pulled the letter out and read it. The letter was from Ivan's mother. She was reminding him that he must be sure and be faithful during the special season of Hanukkah, and that she had sent him some food. With that, the major told Ivan that he would be shot at sunup. He then dismissed him. They took him back to the pigsty. They brought the the driver up, and he thought the driver was also Jewish, and he told him never shoot him at sunup also. They took him back to the pigsty. Well, as luck would have it, at 4 a.m., we started shelling that house in that area where the prisoners were and where the house where the German officers were staying. The house caught fire, and the German officers disappeared and left Ivan and the other soldier prisoners to be taken back to Germany on foot by non-commissioned officers. One of the officers, incidentally, non-commissioned officers, saw that Ivan had very nice shoes, much nicer than he had. So he forced Ivan to take his shoes off and give him the shoes so that he could wear them. And Ivan walked in stocking feet for miles in the snow and ice. They were taken on back to Germany and suffered many indignities during this next number of months.
Dr. Hartman, thank you for that story. I'm deeply moved by it. And I want you, if you will, after our break, to continue that story. But then I want to get to a question. Number one, what led you into medicine? 19-year-old boy through all of that. Number two, why have you not suffered from post-traumatic stress like so many soldiers? You saw as much death and mayhem as anyone I know, and that seems not to have been a problem for you. We will be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with Dr. Ted Hartman.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotz. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotz.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotz. Our guest is Dr. Ted Hartman, who is telling us about his friend Ivan, who was captured, suffered a great deal as a prisoner of war, including illnesses and disease. And Dr. Hartman, if you would pick up that story, please.
Ivan and the driver were kept together and assigned all types of common labor. They were moved by train, which got strafed by American Air Forces, not knowing that there would be American soldiers on the train. It was a German train, and that was the only thing that the Air Force knew. They were taken deeper and deeper into Germany as our American forces kept taking more land, more German territory. Ivan and his friend both were in the hospital part of a labor camp and were both ill with various types of infectious diseases. Ivan had diphtheria and scarlet fever and was very near death at the time that they were liberated. He was taken to American Hospital in Paris and given superb care and then transferred back to an Army hospital in Denver, Denver being his home. He took a year to really overcome the illness and all of the suffering that occurred, which included virtually no food most of the time because he lost 100 pounds out of his 198.
Dr. Hartman, I'm so impressed. Here is a Jewish man captured by Nazis and survives. He's still alive. And you still get together and keep up with each other to this very day. I want to ask you now, what effect did all this have, or did it, that led you, a 19-year-old boy, to decide to go to school, become a physician, finally end up as dean at medical school at Texas Tech?
Well, my family always respected our family doctor so much that even as a child, I was thinking, if people felt that way about their doctor, I believe maybe I would like to do that. And I just kind of kept that idea going that I would like to go to medical school someday. And that pretty much is the story of
that. Well, it's a story that keeps going because I know several physicians who have known you as their dean, and you're a kind of model for them. So that story keeps going. going. My other question to you is, now, we read in the news so much about what this trauma does to soldiers, and I'm delighted to hear that your friend Ivan got excellent treatment. That shows that we can do that for veterans. But why do you think that you haven't, or did you, and recover? What about you and the post-traumatic stress?
Well, I think back into earlier days, most of the soldiers in the Army, or most of the service people, grew up in the Depression. Life was not easy. We really had no toys to speak of. Christmas, as far as toys, gifts were concerned, was pretty slim. And we just had to put up with a lot of things because there was no other way for us to do. And I think the hardships of that era maybe set the stage for us being able to survive some of the bad things that occur in wartime and still be able to accept it and go on.
Yeah, I remember when Mother Teresa visited the United States for the first time as she was leaving, the reporters asked her what she thought and how she felt. And she said, "I feel sorry for the people in the United States." And when they questioned her, why is that? Because they're suffering from affluence. And your observation about what depression did has a powerful impact, perhaps. We certainly need to understand. Dr. Hartman, could you say a little bit more about HealthNet? That is such a marvel of a thing, to be able to have physicians look at patients far away and be of help. Would it be all right if you told us, say, the first story of your experience with a HealthNet in Alpine?
Yes. HealthNet was earlier called MedNet, but it's the same project. Several of us had been talking about figuring how electronic era could improve medical care throughout rural West Texas. We talked about possibilities of things we could do, and then I presented that information to Senator Benson, who was then chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. He was very interested in pursuing the idea and set up a significant federal grant which had an individual line item in the 1988 budget. In that MedNet, we had a couple of things. One of them was we provided continuing education programs that we sent to satellite and then were picked up at various rural hospitals throughout rural Texas from the dish that we provided to them. This worked well. We also were organized to provide patient consultation in Alpine and in Fort Stockton. Our very first consultation was in Alpine, where we were looking at a patient who had had to have a colostomy for medical reasons. It had been several months since the colostomy had been performed, and he seemed to be doing well. His family doctor wanted to show the patient to us on the MedNet screen and ask if it was time to close the colostomy. We started our consultation with the doctor showing the patient, and we recognized from viewing the area that would need surgical care that it was ready, that the muscles were ready to perform properly, and we arranged for him to come into Texas Tech in Lubbock and get the colostomy closed. Just as we finished that consultation, the family doctor said, "I have a 4-hour-old newborn girl here who's in severe respiratory distress. Could you get a neonatologist for me to talk to?" Well, we fortunately were able to arrange immediately for the neonatologist there at the medical school to the room where we were having the consultation. She looked at the x-ray, she got the history, we got some new laboratory tests while they were talking. She then, in cookbook fashion, instructed the family doctor step by step what to do for this baby. Within 3 to 4 hours, the baby was markedly improved, and shortly after that, she was doing so well that she could be taken by family car to the neonatal unit in Odessa. This was the first consult that we had done for MedNet, and it showed that we could provide consultations, medical consultations, and help family doctors or doctors in rural areas by them being able to show their patients and give us information that we could then translate and return to them recommendations as to how to treat the patient.
Dr. Hartman, if I understand correctly, that was one of the first, maybe the first pilot program in that, and you had your hand in that in Texas Tech. What a gift it's been now. Now it's spread worldwide.
It is. It did serve as kind of a model type of program of how, what you could do even through the copper wire telephone lines in rural areas.
Dr. Ted Hartman's book, Tank Driver, will be published soon in paperback. There is a previous a book that caused that book, 1,000 Miles of Fighting, which he has himself. Dr. Hartman, thank you for being with us. Thank you for the gifts you've made to this community of ours at Lubbock and to our country as a nation. Thanks for your good spirit and for giving your time and effort to be here with us. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Ted Dotts, and you've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, interviewing Dr. Ted Hartman.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Hospice of Lubbock, Happy State Bank, and the law firm of Mullen, Horde & Brown, LLP. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.